Sometimes I find myself finding myself in this exact same category of comparing myself to other people, right? And I think all of us do that from time to time. You know, even if you're in your job or in your career, you'll look at maybe a good friend of yours and think, man, he's getting paid a lot more money, doing a lot less work than what I'm doing. Or, you see the marital situation amongst other people and you'll say to yourself, man, I'm glad I'm not in that marriage, or I'm glad those kids are not mine, or hey, I wish my kids would act more like those other kids, and stuff like that. So we oftentimes will compare ourselves to not only other people, but other situations as well, as opposed to just being who we are supposed to be, being who God designed us to be, and most importantly, being who we need to be for God. And so what I want to do with this lesson is just take this situation and look at us as to who we should be, who we should strive to be, and I want to talk about a better you, right? Not necessarily a better you in particular and what you should be doing for other people, but who you should be and who you should be doing for maybe your spouse, maybe your children, and most importantly, for God. And again, it's so easy for us to kind of get in that mindset, right? And in that situation where we're comparing ourselves to other folks. But every single day, I've got to ask myself, how much stock am I putting into who I am and who I'm striving to be, right? I'm doing a lot of stock into a lot of other things, right? Into my job, into my hobby. If you're, you know, a parent worth your salt, you know, you're trying to put a lot of stock in your kids and making sure that they're being as successful as you can possibly help them to be. But ultimately, that's their decision to make as they grow older, and other people that we encounter in our lives, it's their decision to make. But I've got to realize that I cannot be better because my wife wants me to be better. I cannot be better because a fellow brother or fellow sister in Christ says, you know what, you need to be better. I cannot be a better overall person or husband or father or even overall Christian for other people. I have got to want that for myself, right? You've oftentimes maybe heard the old saying, you can lead a horse to the trough, but you can't force it to drink. Right? And we can try to help each other along this walk of life as much as we possibly can, but we cannot force each other to be who we think that other people should be. We have to want that for ourselves. We should want to be better for ourselves. And so how much stock am I placing into how we are doing or how I am doing? And again, in my overall instance, as a better husband, as a father, and most importantly, as a Christian. And I've got to ask myself, am I being complacent? Am I satisfied with who I am? Am I proud of the decisions? Am I proud of the choices that I'm making on an everyday given basis? And am I just content to be who I am and ride off into the sunset? What am I doing, as I've already kind of mentioned, to become a better father and a better husband and a better overall child of God? Am I being complacent? Hey, I'm a pretty good husband. You know, I'll pat myself on the back and I'll kick my feet up and go to bed at night thinking to myself, hey, I'm a pretty doggone good husband. You know, I'm a pretty good dad. Or am I thinking to myself, yeah, I might be good in certain areas of being a father, being a husband, being a Christian, or even an overall person, but what areas of life can I work on? And I think the first concept of all this is to realize that I am not a perfect person. And I've mentioned this before this congregation, but if you think you're getting a perfect minister or a perfect preacher in the pulpit when I'm invited to the Waynesville congregation, I am sorely sorry to disappoint you and let you know it is the furthest thing from the truth. I am far from perfect. I have so many imperfections that I'm not one that preaches on self, but I could do an entire gospel sermon and then some on the imperfections of Brock Begley. And if we're all being honest with ourselves, I'm sure we all could write an autobiography on our imperfections. And so hopefully the mentality of complacency leaves us and it doesn't ever revisit itself with us ever again. We have to ask ourselves, and sisters in Christ, you are in the exact same boat that us brethren are in as well, that us gentlemen are in as well. And I apologize to the ladies of the audience because I don't think we talk enough about you guys and your roles and the importance factor that you have to not only us as husbands, but to the overall given congregation of the Lord's church. You guys have an absolutely huge, tremendous role And again, I'm not here at this congregation all the time, but I think just in general in the Lord's church, we focus so much time, effort, and energy into the men and what we should be doing and what we should be striving for and how we preach and how we teach. And we fail to realize exactly what the role and responsibilities for our sisters in Christ really are as well. So ladies, you have to ask yourself, what am I doing to become a better wife? What am I doing to become a better mother, those of us with children, or those of you with children? And overall as well, what am I doing to become a better child of God? In marriage, you know, it's so sad and disappointing to see that so many times when spouses argue or come to some kind of a conflict or something, everyone wants to point the finger at the other person. And not even just in a marriage, in any relationship, in any conflict or anything like that that we come in contact with, we always want to point the finger at other people. My grandfather, Begley, used to always say that when you're making the gun, I guess is what you call it, notion and pointing that finger to other people, if you realize you've got three other fingers that are pointing themselves right back at yourself as well. So it's easy to point the finger at other people and say, you're the reason and you're the cause is why I'm yelling or why I've gotten upset or why I'm this and why I'm that. But I've got to realize, well, maybe it's something that I have done during this conflict. Maybe I'm not being as best as I possibly can. Maybe I'm looking through kind of a very narrow focused microscope or something and looking at so many parts and pieces that you're doing to this conflict and not looking at myself and what I need to be doing, what I need to be working on. Most of the time in any conflict, what happens? You have one person that lights the match and you have another person that pours on the kerosene, right? And that's when these conflicts kind of escalate and get even bigger and bigger and bigger. And so I've got to understand that, yes, while I'm involved in a conflict in my marriage or in a relationship or at work or with a friend of mine or whatever the case is, I've got to look at myself and think to myself, what am I doing to contribute to this conflict and or what am I doing that's going to contribute to this conflict resolution? And so at the end of the day, and the overall introduction piece of this, and obviously the lesson title that we're going to talk about this morning is what can be done for you to become the best you, right? What can you do? What can you work on? What can you really kind of get your hands dirty with, so to speak, to really focus on how you can become the best part and best version of you that God created? Not because it's who Kyle wants me to be or my wife wants me to be or my family wants me to be, but because it's who I desire to be. It's because I talk about this all the time, and I talked about this not too long ago with somebody. I asked them if they go to church, and they said, yeah. He said, that's the box that we check. And I said, Christianity is not a box check. Christianity is a lifestyle, right? You see these National Geographic television shows on people that how they live their life in third world countries or just the different cultures and setups that people, live and how they interact and how they do things and stuff like that. You know, there are different things that work for different people and it works for them. But what works for you, right? How can you be the best version of you? And it's something that we have to want, right? Just like Christianity, it's a lifestyle, like as I talked about on the third world countries and stuff, these other people that live their lifestyles, right? Christianity is a lifestyle. It's the way that we live. It's how we interact with each other. It's how we interact with those outside of this lifestyle and so many other things as well. So what can we do? What can we talk about? What can we engage in here this morning that can help us to understand how we can become a better us? Not because anybody else wants us to be that, but because we genuinely want to be that. And so I've got 4 points I'm going to look at this morning. Again, at Fairborn, we've gone back to a 2-hour service, and so our sermons are usually about 35 to 40 minutes. So I'm still trying to get used to that here at the Waynesville congregation. So my first lesson this morning is going to look at those first 2 points, and then the second part of the sermon this morning we'll look at the third and the fourth point, Lord willing. So number one is, how can I be a better me, and what can I do to really and truly just be the best person that I can possibly be? Number one, I got to learn to walk closer to God. I've got to learn what this means, what this is, what this involves. And in general, I've just got to learn to be closer to God, to walk closer to God. And we sing the song, I know it's in the Sacred Selections hymn book, which I think you guys do on Wednesdays or something, but walking along at eve, you know, walking closer to God, and you know, there's about two or three different songs that come to mind. That we sing in those psalm books, and he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me that I am his own. You know, so many different songs and phrases that come to mind with that. But I want to look at real quickly Luke chapter 9, beginning with verse 23, which reads, "And he said unto them all, if any," I'm reading from the Old King James Version this morning, "if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall save it. For what is a man advantaged if he gain the whole world and lose himself, or be cast away? For whosoever shall be ashamed of me and of my words, of him shall the Son of Man be ashamed, when he shall come in his own glory and in his Father's, and of the holy angels." A lot we see here in these three passage of verses, but one thing that I want us to focus primarily on is in verse 23 when he says, let him deny himself, right? Let him deny himself, take up that cross, and he says, and follow me. But what word did I leave out here in verse 23? Deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. And what that teaches you and I and all of us is that if we are going to commit our life to God, we're going to commit to Christianity, there is no vacation. There is no time or separation of time where we think, well, yeah, I'm going to live for God up into this certain amount of time, but then I'm going to take a couple of weeks off. And I'm going to engage in the world. And I'm going to be a different person. I'm going to enjoy the pleasures that this life has to offer. That's not how Christianity works. If we're going to be committed to God, and he tells us, I will never leave you, and I will never forsake you, if he's made that promise to us, guys, that's got to be a promise that we are willing to make back to him as well. And as time goes along, we realize that there is not a care, there is not a possession, there is not a materialistic object in this world that should cause us to want to separate from that love, that dedication and commitment that God has towards me. So I've got to be willing and wanting to walk closer to God. I need to deny self. Are there pleasures and cares of this world that Brock Begley would like to maybe engage in that is completely contrary to God's Word? I think if we're all being honest within ourselves, of course. There's a lot of things out there that we might like to engage in and, you know, be a part of the nasty jokes or whatever the case is, and you know, be a part of different groups and social aspects and maybe do different things on Sundays than worship with the righteous saints of God. But at the end of the day, is any of that worth it? If you gain the whole world, the Bible says, and lose your own soul, what have you gained? So I read here that I am to deny myself, I am to take up my cross daily, which, as we mentioned, means there is no vacations from God or living this Christian life, and to deny myself and follow Him. Let's turn over. What did I do here? Let's turn over to Genesis chapter 5, beginning with verse 22. Reads here, "And Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him." Enoch had this special relationship where he walked with God. And so we need to ask within our own selves as well, how much are we walking with God today? How much are we focused on God today? How much, when I go to different places, go to different restaurants, go to different social groups, maybe even go to a different congregation of the Lord's church, am I okay to be walking with God into these places and doing these things that I am doing, and maybe having the conversations that I'm having, and so on and so forth? Is God okay to hear me say some of the things that's coming out of my mouth? If God were in the physical presence with me right here and right now, would I be ashamed of what I have on, much like Adam and Eve, right? When they realized their nakedness and they quickly tried to hide from God and cover themselves up with fig leaves. If I knew that God or Jesus Christ was standing right here in the physical flesh, Would I be trying to cover up parts of my body? Would I want to take off that maybe nasty t-shirt that had maybe not the most appropriate language or even picture on it or whatever the case might be? I have to ask myself those questions. The closer a person walks with God, the more revelations of life are known. Have you ever thought about something in life? Maybe you're going through something and you think to yourself, why am I going through this? Why am I developing these emotions, these raw feelings? Why are all the negativity from this situation or from this person just absolutely flooding me right now? We have a sister at the Fairborn congregation that for about 8 or 9 months, she had had an accident and it was really bad on her sciatica. She was going through all this pain and all these medications that she was taking and stuff like that. But you know, her attendance at Fairborn, she, up until the time she had surgery, probably came 85-90% of the time. She kept asking, I don't understand. Why am I going through this pain? Why am I going through this suffering? And she's still at a somewhat young age. And I told her, I said, because you don't understand the example that you're setting to us as the congregation here. When one of us wakes up with a little bit of a headache, we know that Michelle's going to be there at our congregation when she can barely walk. She's coming in on a walker sometimes, you know, and all the pain that she's going through, but still wanted to be with the righteous saints of God. You have no idea the example that you're setting before every single one of us. And so that's just a small illustration, right? When you go through those things, when your walk is with God, and she told us all the time, she said, I will have to not be able to feel from the waist down for me not to be with you guys and to be with the righteous saints of God. When your walk with God is that strong and that intact, and you are able to be with those of like precious faith and so on and so forth, look at the example that you were leaving behind for other people. Enoch was the first man to uncover the true delight of walking with God. He found something even Adam didn't experience, right? He pressed into God until he learned how to commune with God through every aspect, every facet of life that he could possibly endure. So to find that dimension of relationship certainly required an intense spiritual pursuit. He had to want to be walking with God. He had to want to follow after God. And then when he found it, the Lord made a graphic statement by taking him up to heaven. That walk was so powerful, that walk was so strong, God allowed him to enter into heaven. So consider your relationship, maybe with your spouse. How successful would you be if both parties stopped trying, right? How successful would you be with your boss or with your coworker or any kind of relationship if both parties just absolutely said, this is done, this is over with? We need to understand that God will never give up on us. We're the ones that give up on God. And I think we all know that's a heart here this morning. Likewise, our walk with God never stops and will never be good enough. I hope and pray none of us ever leave this walk of life with any kind of a mentality where we thought, well, my relationship with God was good enough. Things were fine and dandy. They were good enough. Your relationship, much like with a spouse or with a good friend or whatever the case is, with God should never be good enough. And I know I work with some guys that absolutely just trash on their spouse, trash on their wives. The old ball and chain made me do this and that, and they're being dead serious. It's not a joke. And I just cringe about that. Of course, I go home and tell Amber, you know, how lucky are you to have a husband like me that really cares about you and doesn't talk trash. So I use that to my advantage, jokingly, of course. But are you complacent with God? Is your relationship stagnant with Him? Because if it is, it's going to be a very difficult task and walk for you to be a better you if you feel that your relationship is stagnant with God. Number two, how can I be a better me? I got to work harder. When we look at ourselves, and I can bluntly talk about myself in this perspective because my wife and I went to a gala last night at the Dayton, it's called the Dayton Club now, or the Dayton Racquet Club, where her work was putting this thing on. And so I had to dress up and get a little bit fancy, and so I busted out a suit that I hadn't worn a little while. And, of course, I used a common excuse, honey, I think you shrunk my suit. And of course, we all know that not to be true because the suit only gets dry clean. And so I think I'm the one with the problem. So when I look in the mirror and think to myself, yeah, I've got a little bit of a problem here. You know, I work from home for over a year last year. And the problem with that is you don't really exercise a lot. You've got free reign to the kitchen and the cabinets, and you can eat whatever you want. And so when you eat whatever you want and you don't do a lot of exercising, you wind up like me. And so I've kind of committed to myself and talked to my wife about this, that, you know what, I really need to start eating a little bit better. A little bit, not much, but a little bit better. But most importantly, I need to get my lazy rear end off the couch and get more active and get do a little bit of exercise. And I need to work harder at this. Right? I need to work harder at my overall physical physique, for not even just looks alone, but to just feel overall better. And my wife is blowing me out of the water with this, because she wakes up 3 or 4 days a week, about 5:30 in the morning, and goes and works out for about half hour, 40 minutes a day. So I definitely hear about this aspect of quite a bit, as I need to. But as a Christian, I have to ask myself, am I willing to work harder at self to be a better self, to be a better me, right? How easy would it be, as I've already kind of noted, would it be to sit at home and essentially do nothing, right? To sit at home all day, every day. And I know there's people out there that make that a hobby for themselves. They don't like to do anything. They wake up in the morning, they turn on the television, they eat terrible, they watch TV all day, and then they go to bed at night, essentially, right? And so how easy would it be for me from a spiritual perspective to do that exact same thing? Well, you know, it would be very easy for me to do those things. But I know that that would take me away from being the best absolute version that I could be for myself. As James chapter 1 verse 25 tells us as well, "Whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty and continues therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of that work, this man shall be blessed in his deed." It's easy to sit back and come to church and listen to these things. It's a total another element of life to actually make these things applicable to our Christian lives. Anytime I say a prayer, I always mention, God, help us as Christians, or help me in particular, to make these things applicable to my everyday Christian life. Not just to hear them, but to be a better me, right? To work harder, to walk closer with God, and the other elements that we'll be talking about this morning as well. And when you put a lot of work and emphasis into something, and I'm sure Andrew can talk to this, and as well as Kayla, but when you put so much time and effort and energy and blood, sweat and tears into something, and you take that test or you complete that project or get that task done, how awesome do you feel at the end of the day? And I tell people this all the time, I'm sure Kyle does as well, go get that piece of paper, go get that degree. And I know the first thought is, I've got kids, I've got work, I've got a job and responsibilities, and you're absolutely right. It stinks. But when you get done, the joy and the sigh of relief that just comes with getting, knowing that you just got that done, or that house project, or saving up money for the new car, or new appliance, or whatever the case is, just that ultimate feeling, that ultimate reward that you have within yourself just feels so great. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28, "Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor." Let him work. Don't steal for things that you need or what have you. Work for these things. Working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. Work your tail off, right? Work as hard as you possibly can. In every aspect, in every facet of your life, most in particular, your Christianity. When you do that, the benefits that just come pouring in your life, and again, this is not a lesson on Brock Begley, but the things that I could talk about up here right now, about the things that God has allowed me to have, and the things that God has allowed me to see, the doors that God has opened for me personally, I will be forever grateful for. We are commanded to perform with our own hands what is good. In this context, good, that which is being useful and that which is beneficial to me and maybe to other people around me that I can offer these things up to as well. There are many jobs in this world, but none that produce the benefits that working for Jesus Christ gives you and I. And I think if we're all being honest within ourselves this morning, yes, our jobs offer us 401k, nice retirements, good health insurances, and the opportunity to see other people, to network with other people, and all that kind of stuff. There is not a greater benefit in this world than being a Christian soldier for the cause of Christ, working for Him diligently, and working as hard as we possibly can. And I tell you, the conservative church, and I know I'm out of time, the conservative church today is dying. Almost extinct. I'm saying the conservative church is, because we have this lethargic attitude towards working for Christ. And guys, I'm going to tell you, it's not that difficult. It's not that hard to engage in a daily conversation with someone, to try to strike up a Bible study with someone, to try to just get to know somebody on a more personal level. It's not that difficult. We should not only feel good after a day's work because we have worked hard, but also because we have done something worthwhile. We've done something for Christ, and it's allowed us to grow closer to Christ because of the work, time, effort, energy, blood, sweat, and tears that we've put into it. And just like the reward of getting that degree, getting that education, or what have you, when you see a soul come forward, and it's happened to me a few times, that you have worked diligently with, that you've engaged in Bible study with, knowing that you played just one small part in helping their eternal salvation, that you led them to Christ, that you showed them book, chapter, and verse on why they need to take the necessary steps that they need to take, there's no greater feeling in this world. And that's why I got so involved heavily in ministry, knowing that you can play a small part in the lives of other people to help them, and the influence that you can provide to help them with so many difficult things of life that so many of us are faced with and go with. I'm going to stop our lesson there. If there's those in the audience here this morning that are not yet Christians, you have the opportunity at this time to come forward and obey the gospel plan of salvation. If you are a Christian and maybe you've been struggling in some way, shape, or form in some certain areas of your life, let this be the time and opportunity to let us know that we can pray with you and for you. If we can help you in any way, please let us know. While together we stand and sing praises to God at this time. Thank you.